You're listening to a proud member of the Dice Tower Network, dedicated to bringing podcasters together for the greater good of gaming. It's sort of like Voltron, but with better lip syncing. Find out more at dicetowernetwork.com.
Welcome to another episode of the Family Gamers Podcast. This is episode 182.
I have done my due diligence as a podcast host, and I have an interesting fact about the number 182.
Do share.
182 is precisely the number of times our youngest son came out and tried to delay his bedtime.
That's not far off. Yeah.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Family Gamers Podcast. As always, I am your host, Andrew, and I am joined by my lovely and wonderful wife, Anitra.
That's me.
This episode of the Family Gamers Podcast is sponsored by First Move Financial. Anitra.
What?
Did you know the best time to start planning your holiday spending is actually right now?
I did.
I mean, I know what you're saying, but wait, it's only February. We just got out of the holiday season. Why should we start planning for next year now? One common budget killer is, quote unquote, one-time expenses that creep up on us, even though we should know they're coming.
This isn't just Christmas. It's also things like children's sports activities, for example.
Like baseball registration?
Like baseball registration, which is right now, at least for us.
Yeah. An easy way to make sure your bank account isn't crying next January is to look at how much money you spent on holidays last year, divide it by 12, and start putting that money aside as part of your regular budget. As a bonus, when all those Christmas and July sales start popping up, you've already got money set aside for buying some of those gifts.
Great idea.
Mm-hmm. To schedule a time to talk to First Move Financial about other ways to take control of your finances, head over to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers to set up an initial 15-minute call. Thank you to First Move Financial for sponsoring this episode of the Family Gamers Podcast.
So, Andrew, do you know what year it is?
2020.
Yes, but it's also past the end of January, which means it is now the year of the rat.
Oh, it is the Chinese zodiac. In the Chinese zodiac. And, you know, China's kind of been getting a raw deal lately.
Coronavirus and
pretty much exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. All that.
So what we thought we'd do with this week of the podcast is we would kind of celebrate the Chinese zodiac a little bit. And this week we're going to take a look at games that feature or have as supporting characters mice or rats.
Yeah, because we say it's the year of the rat, but actually the Chinese word is a generic term that can refer to any small rodent-y animal, rat, mouse, whatever.
So it is the year of the rodent-y animal.
Yeah.
Got it. Well, before we talk about that, we told you guys last time that we were going to game our faces off.
Game our faces off we did.
It was awesome.
We mentioned just a couple of these on our podcast with George Capenay.
We sure did.
But we're going to talk about the rest of them right now.
So I'm going to mention a game that actually is on our rodent-y things as a supporting character list because we played it the weekend that we were on the West Coast, and that was The Quacks of Quedlinburg.
Yeah, it's still great.
Yeah, I
really enjoy it.
Didn't really like it all that much.
It could have been that it was getting very late.
Yeah, and he was not pulling good tokens.
Bag building is a tough thing because it's a different sort of randomness than a card draw or dice rolling.
Well, I mean, you can play the statistical odds, but in reality, it could be anything.
You get what you get.
You get what you get.
Yeah.
You don't get upset, except he did.
Maybe sometimes you get upset.
But that's okay. So, I mean, really what this did, though, for me, was it reminded me of how much I want to get the expansion. And it's not so much about the added functionality, but man, I would love to play that game with five people.
Yeah. Yeah, me too.
Yeah. So I think that's probably something that we should budget for in 2020.
That's a great idea. Let's put it in the budget.
All right.
But we played lots of games. I played a couple of games on the airplane. Most notably, I played a couple solo games of filler, which I managed to just barely get to fit on the tray table. My goodness, those tray tables are tiny.
Yeah, I mean, I saw you try to cram that on there. I think that was like the one flight that we actually sat next to each other on. There was not enough room.
I was surprised because I was thinking to myself, my goodness, when we were getting ready to review this, I played it on a little tray I made that was the size of an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. I made it work in that tray. Why can't I make it work on the airplane tray?
Because airplane trays are really
terrible.
Tiny.
Terrible.
And they didn't have edges, so you couldn't lean anything.
I couldn't lean cards against the edges. Yep. Yeah.
But, I mean, it is possible to play solo games on airplanes. It works.
As long as they're not too big.
We also played some Handsome. We played this a little bit on the way to this trip and then at the trip itself. Handsome is an interesting game. It's a button shy game.
Mm-hmm.
And essentially, if you imagined a cross between any of your standard word games, like a Wordzee or Letter Tycoon or something like that, mixed with Texas Hold'em, that's kind of what Handsome was.
Yeah, there were common letters in the center of the table, and then everybody had a hand of, I think, 2 cards?
You start with a different number, but then everybody actually plays some of their cards into the common pool in the middle, so you end up with 2 cards that are only your own.
Yeah, and then really what you're trying to do is, it's not really the usual make the most valuable word or make the longest word. It flips the value equation around a little bit. You're trying to win a majority in 3 different suits.
And the suits, of course, are different kinds of ties or neck garnishes.
Neckwear.
Yes.
Because you want to be handsome. But that was an interesting way to do it. Because it's a button shy game and it's only 18 cards, all of the letters you have to work with are consonants. No vowels here.
Which actually, for me, was really difficult. It was
surprisingly difficult.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, some of the people we played with were really able to pull out some killer words, and they were like 8-9 letters long, even though they really only had 5 consonants to work with, and they didn't even use them all. I just had a really hard time with that.
But the good news is that the number of vowels you use in the word doesn't matter.
Right.
All you're being scored on is the consonants.
I think the length of the word is like a tiebreaker or something.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's not a primary.
It's not a major factor
in the game. Yeah. So that was Handsome from Button Shy. It was a pretty interesting and fun little game.
I like that one too because it scales everywhere from 2 players to 6 players, I think, which is pretty impressive for an 18-card game.
Yeah. Yeah. I also played some King Domino Duel. Now, this is the 2-player roll and write from Blue Orange. Came out last year. It's in the King Domino universe, and it's interesting. It uses dice to create a domino effectively through drafting.
And you're dice drafting. Because it's a 2-player only game, you pretty much have to do some hate drafting, which I'm not really sure how I feel about. It's a solid game overall, but I just prefer the original King Domino.
Yeah, so hate drafting, if you're going to define it in the King Domino way, is it's a little like hate drafting technically is something where you're drafting something that is also going to hurt you, but you're doing it to deny your opponent. And that
is useless for you, maybe.
Well, useless for you, I mean, there's still a tactical advantage there. Hate drafting is where it actually like hurts
you. Where it hurts you, but it hurts the other person more.
Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah. So that sometimes comes into play near the end of the game. I think it's really just tactical drafting, but there's not a lot of combinations, so it can feel very aggressive, even though it might not be.
Yeah, it really does. But I played it a few times with Asher after we'd come back from our trip as well. Mm-hmm. He enjoys it. I'm kind of meh.
Yeah, I mean, that's how I feel about it, too. I think there's so much interesting stuff going on in the roll and write genre right now. I think roll and writes were like the game style du jour in 2019. This one's just not grabbing me. I want to like it more than I do.
And even the idea of making it 2-player only, so it's a duel, I would rather just play King Domino and maybe do the 7x7 grid, which is a little more interesting.
The 7x7 variant of King Domino is great. By the way, if you own King Domino and you frequently play it 2 players and you haven't played the 7x7 variant
before,
Do it. It's great.
Do it.
It's basically just playing a 7x7 grid instead of a 5x5, but it gives you a lot more options. Everybody scores more points. And if you're playing 2-player, you've got a bunch of extra tiles anyway. So it's totally worth it.
All right, let's look at a couple other things we played when we were on our trip. We introduced Draftosaurus to some more friends.
We did.
The cute dinosaur meeples. They win everybody over.
Well, not everybody.
Even hardened gamers. Usually.
I think it went okay. I think the game was received well enough.
I cracked up because you told our very hardcore gamer friend, you're going to hate this game. And he spitefully decided he would love it just to be spiteful.
I don't remember why I said he was going to hate it. I think because he doesn't like chance in games. He's one of those people.
He's not a big fan of drafting either.
Yeah, which is whatever, fine. But there was a game that we played that he loved.
Similo.
Absolutely. When I've played Similo in the past, usually it's 50-50 fantasy versus history, or maybe it even leans a little bit more fantasy.
Yeah.
This was all history all
the
time.
He was all about the history.
He loved this game so much that he's like, okay, I'm going to take this home. He lives in the Wisconsin area, so there's a lot of game development in that area. Mm-hmm. He's like, I'm going to make like a game developers in Madison, Wisconsin.
Simulo.
Copy of Simulo, yeah. Or something. Or, you know, a sci-fi version or this version or that version. I did point out to him that the reason those don't exist is because of intellectual property rights. So he can do whatever he wants.
Yeah, so he can do it.
It's unlikely we're going to see them unless Horrible Guild works with DOP.
That would be cool.
That would be amazing. But Simulo continues to impress almost everybody we show it to. $10. Can't beat it. We keep talking about mixing them together. We should mm-hmm. really do that sometimes.
Yeah, we need to do that.
But those games are fantastic.
Let's see. We had mentioned we played Parks. Parks is gorgeous.
Mm-hmm.
I
mm-hmm.
would be happy to play it again the next time that we're with somebody who has it. I'm not willing to shell out for it myself, but it's a great game.
It is a little pricey. It's a $50 game.
Yeah.
I mean, you can tell the production quality is great.
It's great.
If the right gift cards landed in my lap, I would not be sure. ashamed to spend them on a copy of Parks.
Sure. We've played a couple more games of Ecos.
We did. Yeah, we talked about
Ecos
last week.
I'm really, really enjoying it.
Yeah, we played it a little bit more. You know, here's the thing about Ecos. I think the key to enjoying a game like Ecos is just accepting that it's not a game you're going to min-max. Because there's so much information.
Yeah, I enjoy it every time. I no longer feel completely over my head, which I did the first time I played. Mm-hmm. But I definitely enjoy building my own little engine and seeing just in general where our cooperative continent building ends up. Because it's different every time.
Also, pro tip, either get the hippos or keep them out of the game. Like, I don't know what it is about these hippos, but they just destroy when they are on the board.
They are very powerful.
Yeah. Like, there's other animals that are more powerful, but you don't get to use them as many times. And yeah. That whole spinning card mechanic thing, like,
yeah.
First of all, it's great and it's cool and I love it. But the hippos are just a little OP for me. Like, every time somebody plays the faction that ends up with the hippos in it, it's killer.
Sure.
Killer hippos.
Killer hippos. Oh. All right. Well, moving on. After we came home, we got our copy of Lots in the mail.
Yeehaw.
So excited.
Yep. I was actually like super concerned because it was supposed to come on the Friday that we were gone, and then we came home and it wasn't there yet, and it took like an extra week and a half for some weird reason. I don't know what
still
that
happy.
Was about,
but still we finally happy got that it. I got it. So that good. I got here. Yep. Yeah. I'm really enjoying it. Although it's a very different game than Ecos, it has a little bit of that same aesthetic that you're competing against each other while building something together, which I am really beginning to enjoy as a idea in gameplay.
Well, it's a nice way to play games with kids because it's not this kind of aggressive back and forth hammering on each other kind of thing. You're kind of competing, but you're kind of doing your own thing. I like it in Ecos because you've got that central board, so it's not a game like Dominion or whatever where two people are basically soloing right next to each other.
Yeah, definitely.
So that part I like, and Lots is the same way. And I think maybe that's the part that I need to keep a game feeling like an actual game to me.
Yeah, I can get that.
And a lot of people have said with Dominion that the expansions will, you know, solve
sure,
that problem.
Whatever.
So fine, whatever. But
with Lots, it's also one of those you can be very cutthroat if you're playing with all adults, or you can be a little bit less cutthroat playing with kids. Because the problem is if you play very cutthroat, that means you leave holes in the tower, which means it's way more likely to fall over. Mm-hmm. And if it falls over, you lose and everybody else wins.
Hey, sometimes people like taking risks. Hey, what can I say?
It happens.
It's like Jenga.
Yeah, it is like Jenga.
So, Common Heart Game Night last week, we featured The Game of Wolf from Grey Matter Games.
Yeah, you need to talk more about this because I was off in a corner.
So, okay. So, this is a game that says it's for 4 to 12 people, which mm-hmm. is interesting. And it's one of the reasons we featured it
count.
Because it supports a high player count. And we've been having a lot more people showing up at Common Heart Game Nights, which is awesome, by the way. If you have any questions, go over to commonheartgames.com. The Game of Wolf is a trivia game, so it requires domain knowledge, which is a little bit of a downer when we're talking about playing games with a family, at least in terms of playing games with your kids.
Yes.
So the way the Game of Wolf works is, let's say for a moment we have 6 people playing this game. You are the wolf. The person to your left or right, it doesn't really matter. Some person's reading off questions. They give you the topic, celebrity marriages. And then they ask you the question, which is something like, identify the celebrity by their list of spouses. This was a real card.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's going to be 5 bulleted things, like a list of, in this case, list of spouses.
I know nothing about that.
You would be surprised. I bet you'd get some of them.
Okay.
But that's kind of the charm of this game. So I say this to you and you're like, nope, that's not happening.
Nah, I got nothing.
And so what you can do is you can look around to everybody and you can say, you, basically the phone a friend from...
You're going to be my teammate
now.
Who
wants to be a millionaire. Yeah, you're going to be my teammate. And then they help you. And if you are successful, you both get a point. If you decide to lone wolf something, you get twice as many points.
Hmm.
But what that really looks like is it's either you or you and a partner against everybody else. So you've got an answer board and they've got an answer board.
Sure.
And you have to answer these five questions, which honestly are a lot less difficult than I thought they were going to be for a lot of them. Like, I got all five of these spouses and I'm not like a
celebrity
yeah, you're, person.
You don't really follow celebrities. Yeah.
One or two of them were weird guesses. Like Christy Brinkley was a tough one. But if the wolf pack, the two people, or the lone wolf have more answers correct, they win points.
Okay.
The goal of everybody else is really just to prevent the wolf from getting points. So they don't get points. The other group of people, however many there are, they don't get points.
Okay.
But they're trying to guess as many as they can so that the wolf doesn't get points. So the play goes all the way around and everybody gets to be the wolf once, and that's a round. And you do three rounds. So in the first round, it's worth 1 point or 2 points if you're the lone wolf. The second round, 2 points or 4 points if you're the lone wolf. The third round, 4 points or 8 points if you're the lone wolf. And at the end of that, whatever wolf has the most points wins. When we played it, we had 10 people. And having one or two people against like eight people was just not really going to work around the table. So what we basically did was we paired people up. So we had five teams of two. And so if a team of two said we don't want a lone wolf, it would be four people against
six people. Okay.
And that worked pretty well. What we ended up doing was having the wolf people go to a separate table. That way people could actually discuss freely if they needed to. And honestly, it worked so much better than I expected. Because
it sounds awkward, but
it really wasn't though. Like, I understand that it sounds awkward.
I did witness it kind of from afar in the cafe, and it seemed like it was working well, and everybody was having fun. And you know, you would get back together and start reading off answers, and there would be the
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And basically, what we ended up doing, like, the rules say that the person reading the question is the person to the left of the wolf, and blah blah blah. We just had one person who really enjoyed reading off questions, read off all the questions, and it was great. It was way more fun than I expected. That's The Game of Wolf from Grey Matter Games. It's actually a really good party game. We had a lot of fun with it.
We went out to celebrate Valentine's Day. Not really on Valentine's Day, but near it, because that's how we roll.
Pretty much.
And it was also mostly just an excuse for me not to cook. But we went out and we brought just one. It works remarkably well as a restaurant game. And we were even able to bring in the five-year-old, who is not quite able to read and write yet, but he's getting there.
Mm-hmm. I was actually really impressed with the way you brought him in.
It was challenging, but doable. We did things like the person who was waiting to get the clues would need to block their ears as well as look away so that someone could explain to our five-year-old what the word was we were trying to clue for and start to give a little inspiration of how clues would work. When I would team up with him, which was most of the time, except when I was the guesser, I would tell him what the word was we were trying to give clues for. And then I would let him just think and stew for a while I came up with my clue.
Mm-hmm.
I would write down my clue and then I would come back to him. Have you thought of something yet? If yes, great, we'll write it down. If not, let me give you a couple of hints here and there. I mean, we weren't playing this competitively. I mean, Just One's a cooperative game anyway, but we weren't really playing it in a competitive way. It was just for fun as a family. But we had a great time, and most importantly, he had a great time and only slowed the game down a little bit.
Yeah, it was fun.
It was a good time.
While we were waiting for our food, we probably went through five or six cards.
Yeah.
I think his was the only, like, he couldn't guess the thing that we gave him the clues for. Or something. I don't remember. There was some weirdness.
Yeah, when it was his turn to guess, he couldn't quite get it. And it's a domain knowledge and being aware and all of that.
Yeah, which is fine.
But he had a good time with the rest of the stuff. And he had a good time even trying to figure out how to guess. So,
and honestly, he did a really good job with his clues.
Yes.
I think he did a really good job.
He did a great job.
So, yeah.
Other than the first time when he wanted to just give the word itself as the clue. And we're like, no. That's not how this game works. Let's see, what else? We have resurrected an old family favorite. Actually, two old family favorites. Century Golem Edition has gotten several plays recently.
Got a lot of play recently, yeah.
Well, in part because, again, the five-year-old is old enough to understand how to play now,
mm-hmm.
and really wants to play it because it's a more grown-up looking game. And he knows that his older brother and sister like to play it too. So we've been playing that a decent amount. And also Chicken Cha-Cha-Cha. And we've pretty much house ruled at this point that Asher, who would still clobber us all, is just not allowed to play anymore. He just wants to go play something else instead. And we're like, I'm like, that's fine.
Really?
Nobody wants to play this game with you.
Because he will demolish everyone?
Yeah, it's not even a contest.
That's so sad. All right, well, you know, what are you going
to
do?
But I play other games with him. I introduced him to Circle the Wagons this past weekend.
Mm-hmm, I saw that.
That was a good time. I enjoy Circle the Wagons, but I definitely like Sprawlopolis, which came later, but from the same folks. I like Sprawlopolis better. Circle the Wagons has that same terrain laying idea and the variable scoring.
Right.
But it's a two-player drafting game, which is interesting and unique, and I like the way they make the mechanic work, but I would rather just be faced with, this is the card you have to take, figure out what to do with it, rather than try to figure out how to draft what's going to work best.
Okay. I did play another game that I didn't write down, but I just remembered, which was Boom Bang Gold.
Yay!
This is a game from Haba. This game is a riot. So in Boom Bang Gold, everybody is playing as a gold prospector. And there's a bunch of other rules that I'm not going to mention, but the gist of the game is everybody has a wooden piece of dynamite. And you count to three, three, two, one, whatever. And everybody throws their dynamite into the box. And the box is filled with all of these tokens. And the box has a false bottom. So everything bounces when you throw the wooden dynamite into the box.
Yeah, it's great. All the pieces that flip up, you can start taking the gold, or there's obstacle pieces that flip up, and various people are incentivized to point out those obstacles to the other players. Yeah.
So it's really adorable. There's like the gold miner's pledge or something that you have to take, which basically says, I'm not going to be a jerk, and I'm only going to use one hand. That's pretty much what it says. So that is Boom Bang Gold from Haba. It's a fun game. I think we're going to release probably a snap review for that in the not too distant
pretty
future.
Soon, yeah.
It's a riot. A lot of fun with that. I played that with Elliot.
Yeah.
Surprise, surprise.
Just one last one from me. I've been playing some more Skulk Hollow.
Man, I really want to play that, but I've been so busy this week.
I know. I'm with you, though. I'm really loving the art on it, and I love the asymmetric gameplay. Highly recommend that if you're interested in this game, that the weaker player, whatever that means in your family, takes the role of the foxen. And the stronger player takes the role of whatever guardian it is.
Is it that much harder?
The guardians are definitely harder to win with than the foxen. There's also different levels of guardians. So start by trying the easy one, but then move up to a more difficult one to keep it interesting for both parties. The very last time we played, I was one turn away from winning as the guardian when I got beaten down and killed.
Bummer. Now here's the question. Does Asher, because he's the one that you play this with the most, mm-hmm. does he enjoy playing as the foxen enough that it's not a problem that you're always the guardian?
Well, I'm not always the guardian, but I've begun to suggest that because he gets very frustrated when he is a few turns away from winning and can't do it because he's not getting the right cards or the luck's just not going his way. And part of that is that his strategy just isn't quite as good. And that's fine, but the foxen are more forgiving of less than great strategy than the guardians
gotcha.
Are.
Gotcha. Yeah, so that's Skulk Hollow. That's from Pencil First Games. That is a really, really fun asymmetric two-player game.
Yeah.
We also played a bunch more Wavelength. Still a great party game. I think that's going to be a mainstay at the Common Heart Game Nights.
Sure.
It's a lot of fun. It's thoroughly entertaining, and you get some of the best like philosophical conversations around the table when those different cards come out. I really, really like it.
There's a Twitter bot that you can play Wavelength with.
What?
Sort of. It gives you the picture, you come up with clues. But then, of all the people who give it clues, there is a person behind there who picks who gave the best clue to dial it in.
Okay.
But I saw the most funny one the other day, at least for me, as a giant nerd. The range was Star Trek to Star Wars.
Ooh.
Thankfully, the spectrum was pegged all the way over at Star Wars.
Okay.
But still.
So was it like Luke Skywalker or something?
I had not seen them pick a winner yet, but there were all sorts of excellent answers, like, I am your father, or safe to wear a red shirt.
That's funny.
But I think that's enough games.
Yeah.
That's plenty of games.
I mean, we gamed our faces off, and now that we've talked about them all, we can put our faces back on.
Sounds like a plan.
All right.
Why don't we take a break, and we'll come back and talk about games with mice and rats.
All right. Let's do it.
Bop-dee-woop-bop-doop.
If you don't recognize that, that's the lovely, sultry sound of Kenny G on saxophone.
This is a Snap review for Kenny G, Keeping It Saxy, a cooperative game from Big G Creative.
Kenny G, Keeping It Saxy is a cooperative game for 2 to 5 players ages 12 plus, and it lasts about 30 minutes.
In Keeping It Saxy, your goal is to get Kenny G to the end of his day without losing his groove.
You do this through essentially cooperative set collection.
Every player has a open hand of cards in front of them. Most of these are sound cards, like D, whoop, wah-wah-wah. Each sound also has a unique color and a symbol combination to make it a little bit easier to find.
So the board is made up of 6 different sections, 2 for each part of the day, morning, afternoon, and evening. At the beginning of the game, you flip over a number of event cards from the appropriate deck, from the morning deck, and each player gets 3 actions to try to help complete these events by playing their sound cards.
These events are problems that are coming up in Kenny G's day. Everything from being out of hair product or flight delay to sax reed broke or jazz is outlawed.
So at the beginning of the round, a number of event cards are flipped out depending on how many players there are, and then each player gets 3 actions on their turn. They can play some of their sound cards to help complete these events and help out Kenny G, or they can do things like trade cards or draw new cards if they don't have the cards that they need.
Some cards are also ability cards. These are more powerful than sound cards because they'll let you do things like draw cards and trade, or draw extra cards and distribute them around the table as you see fit.
Once each player has completed their 3 actions in the sax phase, we go to the groove phase. For every event that is still out on the board, there's a number of dice that have to be rolled, and whatever the total is on those dice, that is the number of groove tokens that Kenny loses for that round. You go through 6 of these rounds, 2 morning, 2 afternoon, 2 evening, with the events getting progressively worse as the day goes on. Kenny G is having a tough day. At the end of the 6th round, if Kenny G still has some groove left, you win. You don't even have to complete those last few events because, hey, the day is over, the groove is strong. So Anitra, what do we think about Kenny G, Keeping It Saxy?
It was a fun take on a cooperative game. It was awfully stressful for such a simple and lighthearted, silly game. But I did enjoy trying to work together to get just the right combination of sound cards to wipe the events off the board and keep Kenny's groove.
Yeah, this is very much an introductory, cooperative, public set collection game. Everybody plays with open hands and everybody is discussing what they can do. It reminded me a little bit of a game like Castle Panic, where the player's order with regards to playing cards may matter a little bit, but it's way less complicated than that. This is a very simple introductory level game. So much so that you're pretty much the victim of the cards that come out.
Yeah, your choices always seem very obvious. Like, oh, hey, I have the cards I can play. Great, I will play them. I don't have the cards I can play. I guess I'd better just draw more cards.
Yeah, it's a shame that it felt quite so rote and there wasn't a little bit more going on, but I have a feeling that this game was really designed as a super entry-level game. I mean, let's look at the theme that we have here. This isn't exactly a theme that's going to excite deep gamers, most likely. But if there's a Kenny G fan in your life, this might be something that is worth an interesting gift.
It's reasonably fun. It's probably not going to be very interesting, though, unless you can really lean into the theme of helping Kenny G keep his groove. So, Andrew, what would we rate Kenny G Keeping It Saxy?
Well, in light of the light theme, the cooperative play, the fact that this is clearly an entry-level game, it's not super engaging. Ultimately, it's kind of a little bit forgettable, but at the same time, it's only $10. So considering all of those things, we're going to rate Kenny G Keeping It Saxy a 2.5 out of 5 reads.
And that's Kenny G Keeping It Saxy in a Snap. And we're back.
So the way that we're going to do this, so we've got 10 games. 10 games with mice.
We've got our top 5.
We've got 5 that feature mice or rats. Yeah. And then we've got 5 where mice or rats play a supporting role.
Yes.
Best supporting role for a mouse or rat game goes to... No.
I love that.
Anyway, so what we're going to do is we're going to go through these. We're going to go from the least known game that's on our list to the best known game that's on our list.
Okay.
So there's not a quality ranking or anything like that.
Nope.
But we thought we'd
difficulty,
have a little bit of fun with
none of that.
Yep. So the first game on our list is a game from our friends at Wild East Games. If you've been listening to the show for a while, you know that in 2018 they were a sponsor of the Family Gamers podcast. This is full transparency here, folks. And that game is Pirates of the Caribbean Farm.
Oh. It's great just for the pun.
It really is. To add additional transparency, we are actually featured as cards in the expansion, The Curse of the Farmer's Wife.
Yes.
Which is super fun. You could get a card rat version of me. I mean, come on. Who doesn't want that? Probably everybody.
Probably most people. So Pirates of the Caribbean Farm is a game where you are putting together a rat army to go steal pies from the farmer's wife.
Yeah, it's like a rat pirate ship group.
Yeah.
Pirate group? What's the collective noun for a group of pirates? Pirates? A horde of pirates? A clouter of pirates? A murder of pirates?
There are several options.
Thank you, Google.
For a collective noun.
Sure.
But you're probably going to say a band of pirates.
A band of pirates. That makes sense.
Or a pirate crew. Mm-hmm. Or possibly a mutiny.
A mutiny of pirates?
Of pirates.
That's a legit...
It's a legit collective noun. Awesome.
What about a mouse-tinny? That's too bad.
No.
That's not even a good dad joke. Anyway, so you are creating a band of rat pirates, and you are going and you are stealing pies off of the farmer's wife's...
Windowsill, I guess?
Yeah, windowsill. Essentially, that's the game. The pies are worth different amounts of points, but they have different weights, so you have to group your pirates in different sub-bands appropriately.
You need a strong enough group of rats to actually carry off any one pie. However, your leader can do things like lure rats away from other pirates' crews.
There's a loyalty rating for every one of these rats, so a lot of the ones that are stronger are less loyal, and so on and so forth. And so there's this push and pull kind of thing to get the most pies, and of course there's items that change things too, and blah, 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 blah. So that is Pirates of the Caribbean Farm, a game that absolutely primarily features rats.
Rats. All right, well, how about we switch briefly to mice and talk about one of my favorites. If you've been a listener to this show for a while, you will know that I love from Reiner Knizia.
Yeah, so this is a game that it's probably not my favorite on this list, and you know what my favorite is.
That's fine.
This isn't my favorite, but it's definitely a close second. And the two games that I like the best are very far apart.
Very different.
In style. This game has won a platinum award for the worst SEO in creation.
It's pretty much.
MMM exclamation point from Pegasus Spiel. They're a really good board game publisher. You'd have thought they'd figured out it's a bad name.
I mean, at least if you combine it in your search with, you know, game or Knizia, if you can spell that, you'll find it at the top.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk about the game.
So the reason I love is because it's a cooperative puzzle game where you press your luck, trying to roll dice to match certain foods on your puzzle board. It's accessible and easy to get into, but it's easy to adjust the difficulty. So you can play it with a four-year-old, or you can play it in a group of adults, or you can play it as a single adult by yourself as a very engaging puzzle. So, yeah, I like it. And it's kind of cute to take the role of mice stealing food, much like our previously mentioned game. But in this case, you also have an opponent of a very cute black cat meeple who is getting closer and closer and closer to the pantry. And you really don't want to be caught. You want to get all the food and get out.
I really like that even in the rule book for this, there's a bunch of different variants to make it progressively harder. So,
and the board is double-sided, so you can do the easier side or the harder side. All of that.
Yep. There's a lot of good replayability features in a game that otherwise is fairly simple, and I appreciate that a lot.
Yeah, exactly.
And that is from Pegasus Spiel.
All right. Back to the rats.
Back to the rats. Not weak rats. Not scary rats.
Brave rats.
Brave rats.
This one's from Blue Orange.
It is.
It's a two-player, kind of a dueling game.
Yeah, it's almost like Love Letter crossed with War, kind of.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those, you're each going to put down a card from your hand, and the first player to win a card three times wins the game.
Right. It's pretty straightforward, pretty simple. Lovely art. Very easy to play. All you really need to do is be a simple reader and You can have fun with this game.
Yeah, I mean, every card has its own special power because there's a princess and a prince, and the princess will always win unless you play the prince, then the prince wins. Right. Stuff like that.
Again, it's basically a love letter.
Wizards, etc.
Variation.
Yeah.
Yep.
But they thoughtfully included a reference card with a complete chart of what beats what all the way down.
Right. So that is Brave Rats from Blue Orange Games.
Now we get to one of your favorites.
Yeah, it is. And I understand there's a lot of people who don't care for this game, but I'm going to talk about it and why I like it. And
sure.
We'll move on from there. So this is Mice and Mystics. So Mice and Mystics, published by Plaid Hat Games. It's basically what you're looking for if you're looking for a fairly basic dungeon crawl with a plot that you don't have to manage. It's got a plot book that you read through as you go along.
Mm-hmm.
The general gist of the game is that you and your band of friends have been turned into mice, and you are now fighting your way through the plot.
More or less, yeah.
The difficulty, I think, with this game is that there's a little bit of jankiness in the combat rules, but I don't really think it's that bad. Our problem is that we pick it up once every 6 months and try to play it.
Yeah, there's just a few too many rules there and a few too many things to try to remember from session to session that it just hasn't worked well for our family. And to be fair, the other part of that is it's not quite engaging enough to say, hey, we're going to pack this up, but I really want to play it again tomorrow.
Yeah, this is the kind of game where, seeing as I have a table in my office that we could leave a game set up on, this is the kind of game that we should leave set up on the table.
Fair enough.
And play it more often. And I think that it would be more enjoyable for our family if we did exactly that. So I understand why some people don't particularly care for this. And a lot of the critiques that I've seen have come from people who've turned around and said, but if you'd like a good one, play Gloomhaven, which I think is just too heavy for a lot of people.
That's silly.
I mean, I understand where they're coming from as well. So Mice and Mystics, if you are a parent looking for something that's not quite as heavy as like a D&D, I definitely think you should take a look at Stuffed Fables or a game like Mice and Mystics. And with Mice and Mystics, there's a bunch of expansions. I think we have all of them, even though we haven't even finished the base game. And there's even kind of a corollary game, like a sister game called Tail Feathers, which is definitely in the same world, but it's a little bit different. So it's a really rich world. It's got great art. There's really cool stuff going on. I like the mechanics personally, and I think that if we played it a little more frequently, it wouldn't be as difficult to wrestle our arms around. But it really speaks to me as a former D&D player. So that is Mice and Mystics from Plaid Hat Games. That is our second most well-known game on our list.
All right. Time for the most well-known game that features rats or mice.
Okay, so rack your brain. Think about a game that involves mice that you've probably heard of before. We're going to give you another 5 seconds, and if you hadn't come up with it, when we say it, you're going to groan.
We're going to give you a couple of clues. It's a kid's game about mice collecting cheese. They're trying not to get trapped. That's right. It's Mousetrap.
It is Mousetrap. Obviously, the most well-known game out there that involves mice.
It's iconic.
It is iconic.
This is a game that I enjoyed a lot as a kid, but really I did it as an activity of building the entire contraption.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was way more about building
playing,
the contraption.
Playing
the
with
game.
It to make it work just right.
Yeah, nobody cared about the actual game. It was all about building the contraption. And then some dog of yours or some little brother or sister lost one piece in the middle and it was all trash.
Not me. I'm an only child and my parents refused to play the game with me. So I was able to take it out several times and just do it as an activity on my own.
That's okay. That means you got more value out of that game than anybody else
than
in the city.
Anybody else. That's right. And I never want to play it again.
I would totally play it again. I like building stuff.
But there we are. Those are our 5 games that feature mice and rats as the main characters.
That's correct. We do have a game featuring rats that is being created by a friend of ours called Gym Rats, which is about weightlifting rats, which I think is amazing, and it's a great pun. And as a dad, I appreciate it.
Yeah. We'll see where that is in a couple of years.
Yeah. Gym Rats. Woohoo. All right. So we'll transition a little bit. We're going to go into games that have mice or rats as supporting characters. We'll probably go through these a little bit quicker.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, there's a lot of these.
All right. Well, let's start with your favorite.
Quacks of Quedlinburg. I mentioned it before. It's still here. Don't forget those rat tails. They are a critical part of the Quacks of Quedlinburg. They are the catch-up mechanic in the game. However many rat tails there are between you and the leader is the number of spots that you can skip when you start brewing your potion. Critical, critical part. I'm just going to go right into my next one, which is a game that I really love. It hits me in all the right spots, and that is Purloc Holmes Furriarty's Trail.
Yeah, so this is a cat-themed game, not a rat-themed game. However, one of the gangs you know, might be possible culprits are the rats.
Right. So Purloc Holmes is a sort of cooperative deduction game where you are trying to figure out which gang is committing a crime and what time they're doing it. And as you continue to solve these mysteries, you get closer and closer to Furriarty and hopefully eventually capture him. For some reason, this just gets me in all the right places. I love the art.
The art is great.
Theme, hilarious. I love this deduction mechanic because as a programmer, I like thought experiments and thought projects, and I like trying to get my kids to start thinking about things in more abstract ways. It's just something I really enjoy doing. And yeah, like I said, this game is just, I don't know.
It's great.
I can't say it's an objectively amazing game, but it nails it for me.
Sure. I think that's fair. Okay, I'm going to talk about a game that feels a little bit that way for me.
Mm-hmm.
And is, you know, it's not objectively a great game, but I love it.
Mm-hmm.
That's Simon's Cat, the card game.
Who doesn't like Simon's Cat? Ah.
Feed me. Ah.
Ah. Ah. That's what I'm doing. I'm doing the feed me point. If you don't know what I'm talking about, just Google Simon's Cat feed me. You'll know immediately.
But again, one of the supporting characters, there are several suits in the game, you know, and one is Simon's Cat. One is his little kitten friend, one is the dopey dog, but one is a rat. The goal in Simon's Cat, the card game, which is published by Steve Jackson Games, is it plays a lot like Uno, but the goal is to always be able to play cards from your hand and not get stuck not being able to play. Anytime you are stuck and are not able to play cards from your hand, you have to take the pile, which represents a mess, and I think it's the first player who gets to three messes loses, and everybody else wins. I love the way it turns card shedding around a little bit, and does it through the use of having, first of all, more than four suits. There are, I believe, six suits in the game, and the numbers aren't evenly distributed. So it's good to know that ahead of time, but once you know it, you get into the game and there's a lot more strategy in, do I play this number now, which is likely to come around again later, or do I play this number in a suit where it's going to be a lot harder to get into this suit again later? So that's Simon's Cat, the card game.
Mm-hmm.
All right. How about another one that we reviewed in the past? Catch.
I really, really liked this game because I thought this was a very simple game that helped teach kids almost like statistical modeling, I guess.
Yeah, it would be great to use it for that specifically. My only problem with the game is there wasn't quite enough there to keep our kids' interest, but I like the idea of the game.
Yeah, so in Catch, the strategic game of cats and mouse, there is a mouse who is controlled by a die who is trying to get off the board. And all of the players are playing as cats that are basically trying to move around and block that mouse from getting off. And the reason why I said that this is a game that's really good for teaching statistical modeling is because you can say, okay, look at the die. How many things are there that are going to have the mouse move in this direction? There's one, there's two, there's three. Okay. Well, so based on that, you have a 1 in 3 chance or a 2 in 6 chance of the mouse moving in this direction, but you have a 3 in 6 chance of the mouse moving over here. So which one do you think is a better place to put your cat to prevent the mouse from moving? Because if the mouse tries to move and there's a cat in its way, the mouse can't move. So yeah, there wasn't enough to keep the kids involved and interested in the long term, but I did feel like there was enough there to keep the kids really cerebrally engaged to figure out the math part of it.
Yeah, even at the time when we reviewed it, it got mixed reviews from our kids. So some kids were like, eh, it's okay. And others were like, I think it's really interesting because you can never tell exactly which way the mouse is going to go.
Unsurprisingly, the little one that ended up being our big board gamer, he liked it.
Yeah.
Right, because has that numbers part, and there's a little bit of abstract thought that has to go into that, and those are really components that make a board gamer a board gamer.
So that was Catch from Peaceable Kingdom.
And the last game on our list for the day is Rat-a-Tat-Cat.
A fun numbers card game with cats and a few rats. This is a card game where you're trying to get the lowest score, mostly by getting rid of the rats in your hand and getting cats instead.
Mm-hmm.
It's a nice, simple game and works very much like Cabo,
mm-hmm.
which is one of your recent faves.
I don't know if I'd call it a fave. I think it's an effective game for the audience that it's intended for. But we're talking about Rat-a-Tat-Cat.
But
I will say this.
Rat-a-Tat-Cat.
Lots of people like it. We've done 4 or 5 Game Right game nights, and that game has always sold out.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's simple, it's compact, and the illustrations are super cute,
mm-hmm.
and it's really easy to get started playing. I mean, you got 4 cards face down, you get to peek at 2 of them, and then every turn you're either drawing a card from the discard pile, drawing from the draw pile, peek, swap, replace, etc.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And plus, I mean, who doesn't like a cat dressed as a Statue of Liberty?
I know, right?
Yeah, that's on the cover. So that's it. Those are our games that feature mice or rats in some stripe or another. But I'm certain that we didn't think of them all.
So tell us if you have a favorite game for your family that involves rats or mice.
Mm-hmm.
Or other rodents, I guess?
Marsupials?
Not marsupials, but rodents like squirrels or chinchillas? I don't know.
I know, but marsupial is a fun word to say. I just figured I'd say marsupial.
Marsupial does not equal rodent.
Well, why you gotta get all technical?
Sorry.
Anyway, the ways that you can do that, the best ways for you to get in contact with us and tell us about all the games that we forgot is to contact us on social media. You can do that on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram by using the tag @FamilyGamersAA.
Even better, you can tell us all about it in the Family Gamers Facebook community.
Mm-hmm.
Go to thefamilygamers.com/community or look for The Family Gamers Community on Facebook.
Yep, absolutely. You can also send us an email if you'd like to contact us directly, andrew@thefamilygamers.com.
Anitra@thefamilygamers.com.
Please don't forget to subscribe to the show, tell your friends about the show, and we would love it if you would leave us a review at Apple Podcasts.
Aw, rats.
Or whatever your podcast subscription source is. You can also find us on TuneIn, on Stitcher, on Spotify, on your Amazon smart speaker, on your whatever smart speaker. Just ask it to play the Family Gamers podcast.
The Family Gamers is sponsored by First Move Financial. Go to firstmovefinancial.com/familygamers to learn how the team at First Move Financial can help you pile up the victory points. Thanks again for sponsoring the show.
All right. And that's going to be it for us this week, everybody. So until next week,
play games with your kids.